Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Lee Preston. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Lee is the founder of Shadow of His Wings Ministry. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. Today's broadcast, Healing Hidden Wounds with Lee Preston, focuses on helping individuals who struggle with unwanted same-sex attraction. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Lee on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan, and I'm here with my friend Lee. How are you, Lee?
I'm good, Jonathan.
Good. Well, we are going to dive into a topic. Remember, this is our Healing Hidden Wounds segment where, you know, I had, actually, just so you'll know, Lee, I had some comments from some people lately that said, hey, you know, why do you seem to separate out your Healing Hidden Wounds from, like, your other radio broadcast? Because, you know, some people might see the same sex thing, and then they just don't even listen to those broadcasts. And hey, amen. I've listened to those broadcasts, and they're helpful for anybody struggling. And so, I'm, you know, here on air, I'm kind of saying, we're not making that big of a distinction between these broadcasts and maybe some of our other broadcasts. The difference is we do dive a little deeper into some of the same-sex issues when you're on the air with us, but that doesn't mean that these aren't beneficial for anybody listening.
Amen. And as we've always said, Jonathan, all sexual addiction is just like 1 degree of separation away from the other. So
right.
It just depends on kind of what your hurts are and where you went with it. So.
And I like to think that we're always going to be more alike in our brokenness than we are different.
That's absolutely right.
So where do you want to take us this week? What are we going to be talking about?
Well, this particular topic, Jonathan, kind of came to me as I've been working with men in general. We are, is an appropriate comment you just made, because today's broadcast is really geared at all men. It's geared towards all men, because it's kind of talking about men of all walks of life who have at some point in their childhood encountered same-sex sexual brokenness, whether it happened, and we can call it sexual abuse, you can call it, you know, you touch mine, I'll touch yours, whatever happened, but if it happened between a man, who's now a man now, but a boy, and another little boy, then it can be considered what I guess I'm calling today same-sex attraction or same-sex brokenness. And once that occurs in a little boy's life, he has a really hard time trying to understand that. So it can certainly, once it happens, it can certainly veer off in two different directions. A kid can grow up thinking he's gay and actually live out that gayness, or he can grow up thinking, oh my gosh, what am I? I don't know what I am, so let me just keep acting out with girls now as much as I can to prove that whatever happened back then wasn't me.
Right. So, and in your experience, would you say that, I mean, however it manifests itself later on in a person's life, whether it be through pornography or whether it be, you know, heterosexual affairs, homosexual affairs, whatever you've seen in terms of as adults, would you say that there's a pretty high rate of these types of incidents in young boys in terms of when their sexuality is traumatized?
Oh, I definitely think I couldn't put a number on it because I haven't really looked at it.
And this is unscientific,
yeah,
but I'm just saying, just kind of in your counseling experience and in your experience with broken men.
I'd say it's 50 to 60%, and that's what made it so interesting of a topic, because I kept praying about it and thinking, wow, you know, this is a huge issue, because most guys don't want to talk about it in the first place.
Right.
And they certainly don't want to talk about it if they're carrying around a lot of shame because of what happened back then, that now they just want to cover up with all the females that they can have sex with. And either way, the bottom line is there's a real pain there. There's a real hurt. It's real brokenness. And it feels just really shameful. Like, why would he have done that to me? Or why did we do that together? And what kind of man does that make me?
Do you see that being a similar response regardless of how it eventually worked out later, whether they went the route of just, you know, like you said, kind of just living in that, believing the lies of gayness and just going in that direction, or whether they tried to cover it up and mask it with heterosexuality? Do you feel like when you're counseling these guys and then when they're talking about those initial experiences, are their feelings essentially similar in what they were feeling about those experiences then versus maybe where they've eventually gone now in terms of their acting out?
Sure. I think most of the origin feelings are all the same. You know, mm-hmm. Shameful. I don't know why this is happening. I don't know why this guy chose me, or I don't know why I'm doing this with this guy. But I think it changes at some point for the guy who has grown up in a more broken situation where his sexuality is questioned and his gender begins to be questioned. Then he grows up thinking, oh, well, that's just confirmation that I realized I was gay back then. Whereas a guy who doesn't, you know, has some other things in place, maybe he's not so broken in his sexuality or in his gender. So then he grows up knowing, I really do find in my attraction towards girls, but what he really does at that point is he hides it pretty deeply down. Like, I don't want anybody to ever know this. And if I can have sex with 36 women or girls over my next, you know, 5 years of high school, then I show that I'm not what I thought I was back then.
Well, now, so as you're saying that, one of the things that jumps out to me that's common through both of these scenarios and in each of these particular boys is that there is a tremendous sense of confusion surrounding their sexuality as a result of these experiences. What do you think that confusion does to an 8, 9, 10-year-old boy when he is experiencing these sexual encounters that is just causing him to spin emotionally and mentally in directions that he's just incapable of handling?
Oh, I think it spins him out of control. I think what's incredible is most 8 or 9-year-old boys, they really are, in my opinion, asexual at that point. They don't really know. You know, yeah, maybe mom or dad or grandma or grandpa always say, oh, look at little Johnny, he's got a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. But truly at 8 to 9 years old, there's not a lot of, you know, oh, yes, I love women, I can't wait to have sex with a girl. It's usually, wow, I'm just finding my penis and I'm not even sure, you know, how it works, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of figuring all that out. Along the same time, with all of a sudden this thing happens where either some same-sex touching happens or actually goes into some same-sex sexual activity, and then boys at that point are like, whoa, you know, all I know is I don't feel like I'm supposed to do this, yet something strangely feels good about this, and yet I'm extra ashamed of it because at 8 or 9, most boys at least know what a fag is, and so, mm-hmm. or a sissy, you know. And so they're like, whoa, I'm not sure where I fit now in this. And so it really throws up a huge question mark, and that's where all the shame starts.
Yeah, because, I mean, how does a little boy process that? I mean, you mentioned several things there that are huge. You're talking about, you know, there's something that on a physical level can feel good.
Right.
On an emotional level can create a sense of shame and fear and anxiety. Then on maybe even at 8 or 9, a spiritual level, there can be some conflict of conscience. Then there can be the social level of, even at 8 or 9, these stigmas that even if they don't fully understand what some of these terms mean, it's very clear through body language and giggling and those kind of things that it's a shameful thing. And so you got all this stuff sort of rolled into one coming out of any one of these experiences that these young boys could have. And how on earth can a young boy bear that burden?
Well, he generally can't. I mean, he has to figure out a way to not feel about it anymore. Or hopefully in the best circumstances, he's close enough to somebody in his life that he can go to and say, hey, you know, I'm not sure what to do with this, but, you know, Scott, the little boy I play with next door, you know, he put my penis in his mouth, and I don't know what to do with it. what do you think? You know?
Right.
So they can at least get some adult advice there. But most of the time, because of the shame surrounding that, most guys never do that.
And when you say also that because so many of these experiences occur within family members, whether it be an extended family member, a cousin, an uncle, maybe even a father, that creates a whole other sense of there's no safe environment or safe people with whom this little boy thinks he can talk to. Because, hey, aren't you kind of conditioned, even in the most dysfunctional families, that your safest place is in your family?
Most definitely.
And if these things are happening in your family, what other kind of confusion does that create with this boy where he's feeling on an island, completely isolated, totally alone, unable to deal with these big issues?
Sure. And the crazy thing is, you're absolutely right, is that it's, you know, the family is especially hard to tell if it's happened inside the family. Mm-hmm. But I got to offer to guys sitting out there listening, it may be additionally hard if this is like some guy that you're used to spending the night with when you're 8 or 9 years old, and all of a sudden, you know, you're exploring things that you shouldn't be exploring because maybe he's got a stash of porn somewhere, his dad does, or, you know, he brings out the old porn videos and y'all sneak him off into his room and watch him for a little while, and one thing leads to another, and first it's masturbation, then it's he touches you and you touch him, and then before you know it, there's, hey, we're going to try out what's going on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get into this place where you don't know really what to do at that point. You just feel out of control, and yet you know it feels good, and it's that whole idea of, you know, God gave us sexuality but as a gift, but it was meant to be a gift within boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two boys who are completely out of their bounds at that point, and it causes things to happen that lead to a bunch of shame and a bunch of just unknownness, and then really nobody to talk to.
Well, and then I'm thinking about this additional piece, and this is where we can kind of bring parents into the conversation a little bit, is that, because I've heard this scenario over and over and over again of the little boy who has maybe one of those experiences with their friends where, you know, you touch mine, I'll touch yours kind of a thing, and it happens, and the little boy doesn't know what to do with it. He goes home, he tells his mom. And the reaction that the mom has is so overwhelming.
Sure.
It's almost like an additional trauma it's almost like that's the trauma when there was this sort of ignorant kind of encounter with this other kid that maybe there wasn't. Again, like you said, if it's an 8 or 9 year old boy, there's still not much, if anything, in their lives at that point is sexualized in their
sure.
mind. They don't really understand sexuality. So sometimes some of these initial encounters, now this may sound weird, but there's almost an innocence to them because they're, especially when they're with the same age, like if it's one 8 year old boy and another 8 year old boy, and there's sort of this kind of experimental touching kind of thing. Some of that is just discovery type touching. But then when the kid goes and tells his parent and there's this blown up reaction, and then it's, you know, being grounded, or it's being having toys taken away, or it's you know, no more, you can't have that friend anymore. I mean, all these kind of over the top fear responses,
sure.
which I can understand as a parent, the fear that could have, but sometimes a parent's not looking at the whole situation sort of from that 8-year-old's perspective, because you have an adult perspective that has gone through your sexuality and you understand the fullness of sexuality.
Right, or you've got a lot of brokenness already mixed into
yeah.
your own sexuality, that you hear your little boy just had you touch mine, I touch yours with this other boy in his bedroom, and you automatically freak out and go, gay, homosexual,
yeah.
oh my gosh, I got to stop this, I got to put a stop to it, I got to get this kid away from my son. And
so what I want to ask you is, you know, generally if we're talking like this, we then kind of focus on the parent and, you know, that response and everything. But I actually want you to comment to that boy. I mean, he's now a man, but to that boy who that's been part of his trauma, how does that boy, or I guess how can that man today be able to sort of reconcile all of that happened? There was certainly the event
sure.
that occurred that was a sexual event. But then there was the additional trauma of a parent or an adult or somebody who they were essentially trying to confide in that really just shut them down, basically.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that's what's on my heart is that kid, and I watch him sitting in my office, and I see those little kid eyes. I don't, yeah, he's a man now, but I still see his little kid eyes, that little boy inside him behind the man, and it. And he sits there, and, you know, I keep saying, you know, and what else? Have you had anything else that's happened that, you know, that could cause you to feel either ashamed or traumatized in your sexuality? And, you know, you can just see almost that sheepishly they kind of finally say, well, there was this time that, you know, and then they can unfold the story. And it's, you can just see the shame come pouring out of them. And when you end up having that happen along with a parent who then shames as well, you have this absolute cemented in feeling that, you know, don't ever look back at that age again. Don't look at that boy again, meaning the boy at that age, yourself at that age, don't ever look at him. He was a disgusting, no good kid. He did this wrong. We're not that way. We're never going to be that way. He was the broken one. And I'm talking about the same man. I'm just talking as a different boy mm-hmm. at that age. And so he's basically cut that piece of his life and put it way down inside the basement and said, we're not ever going there again. But everything in the basement ultimately starts to smell after a while. And so it doesn't matter. Life comes along and all that stuff's still in there. And so when I'm talking to that guy, I'm saying, you know what? It's time to talk about it. You're not gay. You're not a fag. You're not a queer. You know, nobody is. God didn't make any of us that way. No matter whether you say you're gay or whether you're this guy who's trying to conquer these 76 women who can prove finally that your masculinity is solid, either way, God didn't make homosexual. He made us sexual and to be in relationship with women in a bonds of marriage. And so as long as you can kind of keep hanging on to that idea that, you know what, I don't even have to question my sexuality. All I have to do is question the pain. What hurts there? Well, what hurts there is I don't understand why I got an erection. You know, these guys are usually asking themselves, well, why did I get aroused by it? Mm-hmm. Or why did I go ahead and have oral sex? Or why did I let him do that to me or him or me do that to him? Or why did it get to the point where we ended up having sex like that or some sort of sexual interaction for, you know, a year or 6 months? Or we did it 8 times, you know? Mm-hmm. Because that's usually where all the question marks come from. Oh, well, if I can see if it happened once, I knew better, I get out of there, I never do it again. But how come it happened 10 times? Well, because anybody touches your penis, it's going to feel good.
Right, sure.
And so you have to know that now as an adult, but you also have to remember that as a kid, that's all you were thinking as well, is, well, all I know is it feels pretty good, and I'm already kind of stirring up this addiction, and I don't know how to stop it now.
Well, you know, I find that kind of interesting because, you know, you mentioned earlier about how an 8 or 9 year old boy is sort of asexual at that point. I mean,
right.
they definitely have a sexuality, but in
sure.
terms of their consciousness of it, they're not necessarily there. And as you were talking about this idea that we are created sexual, not homosexual or heterosexual, we are sexual beings, then it made me kind of think, well, yeah, as it pertains to contact, if a man has his eyes closed and someone touches his penis, it's going to feel good.
Exactly.
Your biology is in some way, your biological system is basically amoral.
Exactly. And
it's just biology.
Whether it's a man's hand or a woman's hand that touches you, it's not gonna know. You're not gonna know the difference.
Right.
It's until you open your eyes and see.
And I think that's a good perspective because, you know, we are the ones that attach such labels of shame, based on how a person's brokenness manifests itself in their sexuality.
Sure.
And the reality is that anything outside of God's design for our sexuality is always going to be less than
exactly
what it was intended for.
Exactly.
And so in a sense, anything that we do outside of that standard is going to bring a sense of shame. It's going to bring a sense of guilt because think about what happened with Adam and Eve. The moment they sinned, what's the first thing they realized? We're naked.
Yeah, they went to hide.
And I find that interesting that the first sense of shame they had was in relationship to their sexuality.
Absolutely.
And I think that has been a pattern for all of history, is that there has been, because of sin, not because of homosexual acts or because of heterosexual acts outside of it, because of sin, there's been a type of shame that's been attached to our sexuality.
Right.
And I think what you're talking about is in these incidents that happen in these young boys, that is heightened. It seems to solidify some of these shame thoughts at a very young age that then just get perpetuated over time.
Sure, sure. And that is a message, really, to the guys listening out there right now, but also to parents listening out there right now. You know, you got a kid who struggles, you know, with just knowing who he is sexually, not even, you know, because he is 8 or 9, and there's always a struggle at that age, or 10 or 11, you know. And so, you know, parents and dads especially, watch what you say, you know, when you make comments about, you know, fags or queers or sissies, or because little boys, there's a lot of pressure in junior high about not being a sissy and not being a fag and not being a queer and not, you know, fitting in. And so they already hear all the pressure. And if there's been any sexual brokenness whatsoever, then they come smack dab right up against that feeling of, oh my gosh, you know, I'm one of those people, the ones that nobody likes to be around. And unfortunately, I do want to add right now, that's changing slightly in our society right now, because now it's becoming more politically correct and acceptable to be bisexual or bi-experimental. And so, but it's still not going to make it better. What it's doing now then is it's saying, oh, well, it's already happened once. Maybe I am bi-experimental. Maybe I am bisexual. And so I should just keep trying it and see what happens. So either one causes you to fall against the grain and go against what God's best is and end up getting hurt. But, you know, it's just a slightly different twist.
And really all you're doing there is you're just creating another label to try to make yourself feel better.
Absolutely.
And how well has that ever worked in our lives?
It never works, but we just keep doing it.
Right. And so I think that's why it's important that our listeners, especially those who've had these experiences as a young kid, need to not think in terms of the labels that have all been attached to them, but say, listen, there is a brokenness there that originated from these encounters.
Absolutely. And I would even go so far as to potentially say some could be considered sexual abuse, especially if it's a grown person with the child, or definitely that's abuse. But even a 12-year-old child who's acting out on a 7 or 8-year-old kid, that's abusive. Sometimes you can have same age folks who act out together, and then all of a sudden what you see, though, is there's still a bit of an abuse factor there, because it's a power issue. It's
right.
The one who's got more power. Well, I'm in charge here, so I'm going to make you do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just have to be willing to at least at some point look at, I may have been sexually abused. Or I may have had some sexual brokenness in the area of same-sex interaction. And what do I do about that?
And that would be my question is, I mean, thinking of our listeners, think of the guy out there right now that's listening, and he's nodding his head and he's saying, they're talking about me. This is my experience growing up. I was 8 years old and you know, my uncle touched me, or I was, whatever the experience was, they're saying, that's me. What would you say to that person and say, hey, these are the first steps you need to take toward healing? What are the things that this person needs to do now that maybe they're at a point where they're saying, man, I've got that shame. I've got that. I know what that's like. What would you say to them are the critical things that they need to do in moving towards healing?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say one more time that it may not just be the uncle, because that's a pretty easy one. What I really want to focus on also today is the same age best friend, or the year older best friend, or the 2 year older brother. You know, those that are a little gray, because most guys have the hardest times with that.
Yeah.
The grown uncle, the 20-year old, you know, that lives down the street, and you know, that we're pretty centered.
But what you're
on.
Saying is all of these experiences, they create the same foundation for shame.
Sure. It's all the same. Anytime you have a boy and a boy who act out together, you got a whole different playground to work on here. You got a whole different work that has to be done. Because immediately when that happens and somebody feels okay in it, you know, it's one thing if I go, ooh, yuck, I don't want to do this, and I walk away and he says, yeah, I don't like it either, and we never do it again. that's different. But if it kind of feels good and I'm so sexually charged by porn and, you know, by looking at dad's magazines and his videos or somebody's, you know, and we kind of start looking at him together, and the next thing I know, we're doing things that we shouldn't be doing, and then it takes us to a whole new place. I want those folks to really listen up right now, because at that point, you really need to come talk to somebody who can help walk out that shame with you. It may not be a wife. It may not be a dad. It may not be your best buddy. It may not be your golf, the guy you go golfing with, because you may not feel safe yet talking to those people. You may need to come talk to somebody who can understand it and kind of know what that means and walk you through the shame.
And who won't flinch when right. you tell your story.
Yeah, because, you know, others might flinch because they've seen you and they've expected certain things from you. And mom might cry and dad might go, oh, my gosh, my son, right. you know. But you need to talk to somebody who can, and you may need to just pray about that and ask God to show you who to talk to. But you also want to be very careful not to just choose any counselor out there, because some counselors might say, oh, well, you may have been gay. You know, that may be your obvious track, and you may need to just go with that. And you really want to be careful with that, too. You really just want to hear these words. You know what, son? I'm sorry that happened, and I'm not surprised you got an erection. I'm not even surprised you may have ejaculated. It may have been fun. It may have felt good. But guess what? That doesn't make you gay. It doesn't make you homosexual. It just makes you broken. It felt good, but now what do you do with it? Because what you could have done is you could have said, hey, I'm gay, and headed off in that direction. Or you could have said, hey, I got to go have sex with as many girls now as I can to prove that this didn't feel as good as I thought it did.
Yeah, or do anything to hide it, stuff it, make it go away.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you may wake up 20 years later and say, I don't know why I still have this sexual addiction, and it may be that very thing that cemented this thing into place.
And that's why I really try to encourage people who are struggling in this way to realize we are more alike than we are different.
Absolutely.
Because everything that we've said right now, regardless of what avenue you've taken, is rooted in that shame.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it is. It's about brokenness. And so that's why I agree with you. You need to talk to somebody who's not going to flinch, somebody who's going to be able to come alongside you and sort of coach you and guide you into a direction where you can say, listen, it's brokenness that is the issue here. And that's what we need to work on, healing and moving toward a place of wholeness, where you're not confused any longer about your sexuality. You're not in a state of panic and shame regarding it.
Right.
And listeners, believe it or not, that is actually possible. That is possible. God wants to get us to a place where we are not in a state of shame about who we are and how He's made us.
Absolutely.
Well, we're glad you've been with us, folks. And if you'd like more help on this, please contact us. We'd love to be able to connect you with appropriate counselors and support groups to be able to help you on this journey. We look forward to having you back here again next week when we come at you with the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
You've been listening to Pure Sex Radio. Training men, educating women. Learn more about our show at puresexradio.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial support of listeners like you. Our mailing address is coming up. Get your pens ready. You can also contact us by phone at 1-800-49-PURITY. That's 1-800-49-PURITY. Our mailing address for your notes and donations is Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 401, San Antonio, Texas 78217. Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.